Other horn is dope.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can make us play against. It makes us air split. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, as far as pirate victories go, that was one.
Yes, you can say that, man. This is this is a mixed bag, man, because obviously the win is good. Obviously handling one of our rivalry SEC West opponents in this fashion is great. But the loss is the bigger deal, and losing Tua in this outcome, and at the end of the first half is obviously what everybody's talking about at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the nature of the injury, it being a hip, you start to think of other players that have had hip injuries, and so I think a lot of times you go first to Bo Jackson, and you think, well, that ended his career, and so there were moments of concern. And maybe longer than moments, because it took a while to sort of get some true diagnosis later in the day on Saturday. But there was some concern that could be career ending, which is certainly tragic. And then you think of other players like C.J. Mosley, who had a hip injury, and then obviously he's come back and had a successful career. And so the hope was certainly that it would be more of that type of injury. And, at this point, by the time we're recording, here it is on Tuesday, all the prognosis is the surgery went well. He's going to make a full recovery. And so as much as we would like him, there's a scale to these types of things, right? As much as we would like him to be healthy and back on the field and competing, the rest of this season, given the fear of a much tragic outcome, I'm just happy that he's going to have a full recovery, and as the team goes this season, we'll make do with what we have.
Well, yeah, we'll be testing that next man up big time here, right?
We will. And, Mac Jones, the second half was, there were other players injured, and there was just sort of a pall over the, I don't know about the stadium, but certainly my living room. And I just, could we just do a running clock or something? Let's just get this game over with. And it was sort of unexcitable second half. I think, 3-0 was the second half score. Mac Jones was 7 of 11 for 94 yards. His first half in the Arkansas game was probably as smooth of a half as we've seen this season. So I think he can certainly come in and play well, but he doesn't have that it factor, that X factor that as we sit at 5, 2 weeks in a row outside the playoff committee selection, I don't know that he brings that it factor that could propel us even at 11-1 into the top four.
No, a win versus, if they're able to win these last two games, that obviously – that's the best case. That's the best case they can make. I was a little bit surprised with the outcome of the Auburn Georgia game. Got to watch some of that and was a little surprised there because I actually expected Auburn to win that game. I think at this point, they still have an opportunity. I mean, if they do what they can do, which is win out. And Georgia, loses to LSU in the SEC championship game. That's obviously their only chance, right? To have two SEC teams, which we've had before. And I think that, as Gary Danielson said, which was an interesting way to spin it. He was like, if they can come next man up at the quarterback position and beat Auburn, his comment was, they deserve to be in. And so, which I thought was an interesting take. And so, obviously 3-0 in the second half was underwhelming. Obviously there was a cloud over the stadium at that point, as you were talking about. And so obviously that, you know, that kind of put a little bit of a damper on, you know, what was going on. But by the same token, you know, I'm going to tell you that granted, it was Mississippi State. Granted, Mississippi State has not had the season that they want to have. But Mississippi State is still a tough physical team.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you, he made a couple throws in that time that he was in there that I was impressed with. I'm not saying he's Tua, but I do think that he has progressed his game. I do think that he's, you can see that this guy has had opportunities to play. You and I know from Saban's era that, you know, a lot of times backup quarterbacks don't really see the field. And so Bama fans need to at least be happy that he's had the snaps he's had, because I think that gives them the best chance to be able to win out here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think over the last couple of weeks, obviously we've got a sample of Mac this game, and we've got a sample of him against Arkansas. But I think, you know, fans are gonna that are going to play a little more attention, knowing that Tua is done for the season, fans that pay a little more attention to Mac Jones, I think you're in for a pleasant surprise these next couple of weeks. The playoff committee, you know, maybe we talk about that next week. I'm not sure, you know, what I make of that. But the next 2 weeks, very winnable with Mac Jones. And I think the players or the fans that haven't been watching real closely, I think they're in for a pleasant surprise. Let me ask you this, and this is almost sort of a, you know, potential sort of fighting question. When it comes to Tua, you know, sort of the blowhard battle lines are being drawn. When it comes to Tua, you know, which camp or what camp would you put yourself in? That he should not have played at all? That he should have come out earlier? Or you know, he was playing through the half? Where do you kind of align yourself in what Coach Tommy would have done with Tua?
Okay, so from my comfortable armchair quarterback position, I'm going to agree with what Tim Tebow said. His take on this was that Tua should sit. Tua should have, you know, that he should have had that week to rest, this next week to rest, another week to rest, and have 3 weeks until Auburn. And so when I saw him, and this is not hindsight 2020. I would say this if he had not gotten hurt. And so when I saw him in this game, he looked a little more agile. He looked like he had a little bit better footing. But he's still 28 days removed, 27, 28 days removed from that ankle surgery. And so if this was Mississippi State of old, where, you know, we've had some tough, you know, drop down, drag out games to the last minute, physical, you know, games with them, and you weren't sure you could win this game without him, then I think you play him. But you, if you recall, I'm the same guy that said against LSU that I wouldn't have started him against LSU. I would have held him out in LSU and waited to play him until I felt like I needed to. So I probably would have been wrong there, looking back at how that game unfolded. But in this game, I agree with Tebow. You know, the Tebow's comment was something to paraphrase that the voters, when the season is over, if Alabama would have beaten them 31-14 with Mac Jones, no one is looking back and saying, oh, they only won 31-14. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to say in hindsight, but going into the game, I wish they wouldn't have played him. I wish he would have had 21 more days to rest with the 21 days he had already had, because I thought that was their best chance to run the table and win the national championship. And so that's why I say that. But the people that are saying, oh, Saban this, Saban that, man, they're just full of shit. Okay. It's football. You don't take somebody out because you think they're going to get hurt. If you felt like he could go and therefore you played him, then dude, this was just a freak thing. I think I saw somewhere where 1% of injury, 1% likelihood of this happening in football. Like a dislocated hip is like 1% freak injury.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't on Saban. You know, this is this just happened. But no, I'm in the camp that I would have sat him because I would have said I can beat Mississippi State 10-7, 13-7, whatever. Right. I won't even do Tebow's 31-14. I think you would have had one more point than Mississippi State with Mac Jones, and I would have just rested Tua.
Right. So I think we share some common ground in our response to that question, but not perfectly. I would have played him. But let me ask you this question. What's your thought on, and this is probably the primary reason that I disagree with the notion of sitting him until the Auburn game. And, you know, the concept of two more games, 3 more weeks of not playing, of not having game speed, and then the expectation is that you're going to roll out against Auburn, who has a really stout defense, and you're going to be crisp and sharp and game speed ready. I don't think you get game speed ready without playing games. And so playing a little bit against Mississippi State, playing a little bit against Western Carolina, I think that would have been my prognosis. And then that is how you're ready to play Auburn. What's sort of your counter to sitting for 2 weeks, really 3 weeks, counting, you know, the game week, you know, not playing for 3 weeks and then going into a game expecting to be crisp? I guess that's the cost of that. The first quarter could be rough. I don't know. What's your thought process?
I think for most quarterbacks in America, you have a sound comment. This is the number one quarterback in college football, bar none. Dude's going to be like the best left-handed quarterback in the NFL for the past 20 years whenever he plays. He's a special cat. And so here he was playing against the number one ranked team in the country, and it took him like a quarter and a half to get in the groove against LSU. And LSU had two starting cornerbacks that are going to go in the first round of the NFL draft next year. Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, it's Tua. And so I think that he would have had an adjustment in the first quarter of the Auburn game the way he did against LSU, and then he would have been fine.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not suggesting you're being dismissive, but you consider that a low ranking argument that he would have been rusty.
No, he would have been rusty in the first quarter, but he wouldn't have been rusty the whole game.
Right.
And so because he's Tua, because he threw for 400 plus yards and 4 touchdowns against LSU,
right,
after being out for 21 days, I think he could have done it against Auburn as well.
Okay.
I will also add that Auburn obviously has a better defense, but Auburn doesn't have the threat at quarterback. Or I won't say quarterback. Auburn's offensive threat does not worry me against this year's defense the way LSU ended up matching up against Alabama's defense.
Yeah. In comparison, Auburn's a pop gun offense. I agree with
yes.
that. Okay. So I hear what you're saying. I think that's fair. I would have played him, Mississippi State, and, you know, in a different parallel universe, I would play him in Western Carolina as well. But I would have had and I'm not suggesting that Saban didn't have a plan. Just outlining sort of my thought process, I would have had a very specific plan. He's either going to play, and there's, you know, I think there's sort of 3 parameters that you could have used. You could have said, you know, there's a duration, and so he's going to play the first quarter, or he's going to play to half. It could be points. When we get a certain point margin, point differential, I'm going to take him out. Or it could be possessions. We're going to play him 6 possessions, boom, that's it. And so whatever it is, I would have done that for the sake of getting him in there, getting some reps, getting him some game speed, and then taking him out. And against State, them being, you know, an SEC opponent versus, you know, Western Carolina, I probably would have played him a little bit more. Half, you know, maybe. When we got up 35-7, that's probably, you know, the prime time to take him out. And that starts to really look like hindsight, you know, 2020, because, you know, there is a lens where it says I would have taken him out the play before that happened. And you know, I know that sounds pretty revisionist, but it did look like on that possession that he was coming out. I think the sideline report was that, you know, he was shaking players' hands. on the bench, and that Mac Jones was more intensely, you know, working out, warming up, and that Mac was the center of the huddle, you know, the players on the sideline, and then Tua came out, and they even captured a little bit of footage where it looked like, and again, it's easy to sort of project, but it looked like Tua was even lobbying to come back in. And then Saban said something about, you know, practice the 2-minute drill. I think probably Mac could have used that. If you're going to go that explanation, then I think Mac could have used that practice more than Tua. But I would have had a plan. And again, not suggesting that Saban didn't. I would have had a plan, and I just would have stuck with it.
Well, assuming that he did lobby, right? Or assuming, because Saban, you know, was interviewed at halftime and he mentioned that they were letting him run the 2-minute offense there, practice the two.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, you know what he can do. You know what he did when he shook off the rust in the LSU game. And so I'm going to guess from my armchair reclining position that the plan was he was done.
Yeah.
And that because he's Tua, Saban let him go back out. I'm going to surmise that Saban is having nightmares about this every single night in the past few days, because I think he was done. And I think, unfortunately, I think Tua wanted, okay, Tua was in a Heisman race, right? And there's voters and there's numbers and there's touchdowns and there's yardage. And you know, he just got through playing LSU and heard that, you know, LSU's quarterback is now the front runner, and looked at the stats and compared the top three wide receivers from LSU to the top three wide receivers of Alabama, blah, blah, blah. Dude, this is not going to be a popular thing I'm going to say here, but – and he's just a kid, okay? He's a kid, you know, playing at a very high level, and from everything that you hear, he's a great kid. But if he truly lobbied to go back out there, which we will never know, then when it's 3rd and 4 and you're back out there for whatever reason, you want to get another touchdown, you want to put some more points on the board, you want to beef up your Heisman stats, whatever people want to guess, you have to know that you just came back from your second high ankle surgery in 21 days. You have to know that you still have an opportunity to have a chance to be in the top 4. You have to know that you're currently number 5. You have to know that your margin of error is slim.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to know that on 3rd and 4, when 2 guys are running at your ass, that you have to throw the ball away. Okay. I wasn't sure if I was going to say this tonight, but I'm going to. Dude, I blame Tua. I'm sorry it was a freak injury. I'm sorry it was a 1% likelihood. I'm sorry he's having to deal with all this shit. But Tua has to know in that situation, I just got hurt 21 days ago, scrambling to my left because I didn't throw the ball away. It's 3rd and 4. You're up 35 to 7 with a team at half. Like, dude had to know there's no way they're coming back to beat us. Like, why not throw the freaking ball away? Like, I'd love your thoughts on that. I'm sorry he got hurt. I'm sorry. I'm glad it's not career ending. I'm sorry he's got to go through the rehab. I'm sorry about all that. But in terms of the situation, why did he not throw the ball away?
Well, yeah, that's probably a turn I wasn't expecting. But, you know, hearing the explanation, I think it's consistent with the type of stuff that we talk about. If you took the injury out of it, which is tough to do, but if you took the injury out of it and you said, you know, that led to a turnover that cost us the game or something, you would have said the exact same thing. You would have said the quarterback's got to know all we have to do is run out the clock here. All we need to do is, you know, punt the ball on 4th down, give them the field to drive, and you know, clock's going to expire. We're going to win the game. If you can change just a couple of the circumstances, and you would have said exactly the same thing. And so rather than a horrific injury, it led to a short field turnover that cost the game, right? You would have given that same explanation. So, and that is a nature of, I won't say critique. That sounds bad, but that's a nature of sort of the observation and you know, calling out our guys sometimes, that is common. So I would wrap what you said sort of around that, because it sounds alarming it sounds alarming given the context of the injury, to blame it on him. But I understand what you're saying, and I find myself not disagreeing with it.
I'm not trying to be insensitive.
No, I understand. I want
listeners to understand this. I'm just calling it plain out and saying he was in that situation 21 days prior, right? I'm sorry it happened. I'm sorry it was a freak injury. It's horrible. It's horrible. I understand. But our job, right? When we do this show, right? We're talking about the game.
Right.
And I'm just saying to you, like, you know, and that's probably what makes him so great, right? At quarterback, is because he's always trying to like eke out something, right? He's trying to always eke out something. And so do you think his lack, because there's been discussion that the injury, while still, you know, only 21 days into it, do you think a regular healthy Tua who had more mobility, right, would have affected that play? Because there's been discussion that his lack of mobility contributed to them being able to get to him the way they did for this freak injury.
Well, I think that I think if you go back and you looked at side by side the injury, the play in which he was injured against Tennessee and the play that he was injured against Mississippi State, they're the same profile play.
Exactly.
He's flush from the pocket. He's running to his left, and looking back, looking to make a play. He's chased down from behind and tackled. And so now you could argue, was it linebackers versus linemen? And so they're different pace and different speed of the pursuers. Was he potentially, you know, half a step slower, you know, against Mississippi State because of the injury? Yeah, you know, potentially you could say that. Would I blame then the subsequent injury on the pre-existing injury? I wouldn't. I mean, if that's the case, then what do you do? Not play slow quarterbacks? I mean, at what level, how far do you carry that argument, right? And so he was already a very mobile quarterback. If he's a shade slower, he's still going to be one of the more mobile quarterbacks. So, you know, that would suggest, if you're going to take that route, then that would suggest that, you know, pure pocket passers shouldn't be allowed to play because they can't escape, you know, pressure. And so I don't take the argument that way. So I disconnect the two. I do. I don't think the ankle injury led to this injury. I think it was freak enough. I was having a Facebook conversation with someone, and he was like, "Oh, I think it's because of overusage. It's a related injury because it's overusage because of the ankle." And I said, "Dude, have you ever heard of a sprained ankle leading to someone's hip socket, you know, popping out? It doesn't happen. Maybe you get a calf strain, but your hip doesn't just pop out of socket." And so the extreme freakish nature of the injury, you had a stat a minute ago, the freakish nature of it, I think, creates a disconnect from the pre-existing injury.
No, that's fair. So I wasn't trying to blame, I'm not blame. Okay. You can't blame him for a freak injury, I guess. I'm just saying that.
Situational
awareness of just, you're up 35-7. And if you throw the ball away and you punt there, what's the harm?
Right.
And so it does make you wonder, because we'll never know. It does make you wonder that does it factor into his mind there that this is my last play? If I don't convert this third down, I'm out of the game.
I think given the competitive spirit that's part of what makes, this is where this is so interwoven and it's hard to, you know, splice it out. His competitive spirit is such that if I can just keep the play alive, if I can just keep the play alive, and some of the greatest, wowest plays that he's had, I always think of that play at Vanderbilt, you know,
where
the phone booth went around, got away from the guy and then threw the ball up. That's the most amazing play I think I've probably ever seen. And that's a play where you might would tell another quarterback, take a knee, you know, play's over. But he had this innate ability. And so it's that's what is part of his greatness. And that had a negative side effect on Saturday.
No, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. When Mac Jones had to come in, you know, on the next series, I thought it was very telling that they showed confidence in Mac in the situation because it was first and 10 at their 15, right? Coming out of the half. And, you know, he dropped back and, you know, made a first down throw to Jerry Jeudy on the first play of the second half. Well, Dave, on that first series there where they ended up getting a field goal, you know, he attempted 4 passes on their 8 plays. And 3 of those pass plays were on first and 10, which means they were starting out on first and 10 with him dropping back to throw the ball, which, you know, you can argue a team coming out at halftime after making adjustments, after losing their star quarterback, would be putting all the load on Najee Harris and just, you know, 3 tight ends and we're going to run the ball. Well, dude, on the next drive, he proceeded to, you know, attempt 5 passes of the 8 plays on the next drive. So in the first 2 drives of the second half, he attempted 9 passes on 16 plays. Does that surprise you a little bit?
Not really. I think there's a thought, you know, the severity of the injury was starting to get out. Especially the medical staff on the headset with the coaches. Hey, this is a hip injury. You know, all bets are off here. And I have this envision of sort of, you know, on the way to the locker room, you know, maybe on the headset or something, you know, Saban's like, you know, Sark, get with Mac, draft up, you know, 8 or 10 plays. Let's have him prepped, ready to come out. Know what's going to happen. This first drive. And I can just envision, you know, the Sark and Mac sort of huddling in the side of the locker room, you know, talking about here's what we're going to run. What do you like? Here's what we're seeing in defense. These plays are going to work. You know, let's talk that through. And so he comes out knowing what's going to be run. He's got the warm ups there at the second half. He knows what's going to be run. I think you also and then there's another layer to it, right? The defense is probably expecting they're going to come out and run the ball. They're going to come out and establish the run. And so you're going to have a little bit of an advantage passing the ball. And you know the season's on Mac. Whatever is next is on Mac. So you can't turtle. You have to go out there and you have to say, we're going to demonstrate full confidence in our backup for the sake of the rest of the team, for the sake of the individual. We're going to demonstrate full confidence here. But there was work that went into half to talk about what the routes were going to be, what they were going to look like, what coverages they were expecting. And then they went out and let him deal. And
but a lot of teams wouldn't do that.
No, they wouldn't.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. I mean, I was surprised.
That would be my reasoning, though, for why they did it. And
did it surprise you?
No.
I mean, he made some difficult throws in the start of that third quarter. You know, he didn't just throw checkdowns. I mean, the pass to Henry Ruggs was a very nice pass where he laid the ball over the defender. And, you know, I'm not saying he's Tua, far from it. But it's almost to your point, like they scripted plays to start the second half, like they would script plays to start the game
for
an offense, which would be smart. And everything you're saying about giving him confidence, et cetera, I'm just saying like the whole next man up thing, they actually did it.
Yeah. When they, you know, they have a little bit of sort of baked in advantage that it was just a couple of weeks ago against Arkansas that he started the game. And so they had spent a full week prepping for Mac, and what were his plays and what were the looks and what we were going to do. And so there was a little bit of, hey, turn your mind back to a couple of weeks. We're going to pick out some plays from that script. And you know, we're going to put these down. Those are the things that they practiced in that game. I mean, that might be a neat exercise to go back and look at, hey, what pass routes did we run? This is why I wish I got paid to do this full time, right? But let's go back and look at what pass routes did Mississippi State, did we run against State, and compare that to the pass routes we ran against Arkansas, and what sort of transferability was there in those play callings. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that there were a lot of similarities.
What else jumped out at you on offense that you want to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, I think it was worth, you know, really talking about the quarterback and expounding upon that. But I don't think you can talk offense in this game without talking Najee. The fact that, you know, in fact, we ran up so many points so quickly in the first half that he did not even have a chance. And some of those on short fields, he didn't even have a chance to get 100 yards rushing. And so, you know, he rushed for 88, three touchdowns, and had three receptions for 51, another touchdown. Tommy, he is the first running back ever to have three rushing touchdowns in a first quarter.
That is awesome. Well, obviously, you know, as you talked about a couple of weeks ago, you know, how his game has changed in the past few weeks. And from a timing standpoint, obviously, you know, that is the timing of this is going to be critical, right? Whenever they match up against Auburn. But, you know, just really happy for him. You know, and to your point, you know, he's had, you know, he could have had five rushing games in a row, because right. against Arkansas, he finished with 13 carries for 86 yards, and now he's got 88 yards and in this last game. And so, you know, if he had had 500-yard games in the last 5 weeks, you know, there'd be a lot of other discussions around him right this second.
No, absolutely. I agree. I do think it was appropriate and sort of, you know, the theme of the game, right, is when can we start getting people out? I think it was appropriate to get him out of the game. Running back, sure. Say particularly, you know, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's a more precarious position than, and it may be the most of such on the field. And so at that point in the game, let's get him out.
No, absolutely. Well, I do want to mention for the listeners, you know, as he's had these nice stats in the past 5 weeks, the other thing that, you know, has been very helpful to him is being able to have that explosive play. I mean, against Mississippi State, he had a long of 20, LSU 31, Arkansas 20, Texas A&M 25, and then Tennessee 15. So, dude, he's had, in the past 5 weeks, he's had four runs of 20 or greater yards, which you look at the guy and you just don't think that's going to be his game. And so not only is he doing that dirty stuff that, you know, between the tackles that we didn't feel like maybe he was doing as much after contact, but he's also piecing together, you know, that other part of his game as well.
He really is. It's been impressive, you know, his development. And we think back in some of the early games. I don't want to say we were negative on him. I don't want to go quite that far. But we were starting to ask questions. And boy, if he has not come back and answered every single one of them, he's been just darn impressive. And every week. It's hard to say he gets better every week, because he's playing at a pretty fine level, but every week he does something else that says, yes, he's getting it. He's progressing and he's hit. It's not an accident that he's performing well. Every week he goes back and reestablishes his ability to play at a high level.
No, absolutely. And I will tell you that, you know, given the unfortunate situation that is faced now with the injury to Tua, you know, we talked at the, you know, we talked about the injury to Forrestall and, you know, what that was going to do to this offense. Well, I think he has bridged the gap a little bit of that void.
Yes.
You know, in with his playmaking ability from the receiving standpoint. I mean, for the listener's benefit, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, coming into the season had only caught 10 passes in his first 2 years. And now he's had, you know, 22 passes on the season already. And what's interesting is obviously, you know, of his 22 catches, 6 of them have scored touchdowns. You know, remember last year we were talking about Ruggs and his opportunities for score relative to touchdowns. Well, obviously this isn't Ruggs' numbers, but from a running back position, it will be interesting to see if Auburn kind of, you know, tries to take that away, because with Mack in the game now, that's a significant number of touchdowns from only 22 catches.
Yeah, it certainly demonstrates that he's not just an outlet or a check down, but he's a weapon in the passing game. That's what I take from it.
No, absolutely. Well, tell me what else that you would like to chat about as it relates to on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, the offensive line has stayed, you know, in this same starting five for the past few weeks now that we've talked about before. What else would you like to talk about before we, you know, do mini game balls?
Yeah, just one observation with the offensive line. Completely agree with what you had there. At one point, and I think it was quarterback related, we swapped Chris Owens back in at center. And so he changed jerseys, went back in at center. They actually showed with their little sky cam before the play, they had the sort of the whole line lined up, and just, you know, my head went, hey, something's not right. And I kind of paused it, looked at all the players and the numbers. And I said, yeah, we got Owens in there at center instead of Dickerson. And so my thought was, you know, that's center related or quarterback related. You have the backup quarterback who is going to get reps with the backup center. I don't think that was injury. I don't think that was anything other than, you know, we'll get in the game. We're just going to swap out, and plus, you know, give Owen some reps. And so I think that's probably the thought process there. I think this week leading up to, you know, Western Carolina, I think there's the full week of practice that Mack will get with Landon. And so I don't think we'll necessarily see that on a go forward, but that was an interesting thing to see right there early in the third quarter.
Absolutely. Well, what else do you have offensively before we do mini game balls?
You know, I thought the wide receivers all had good days, especially considering that Alabama only threw 21 passes. I think the pass to Waddle is maybe Tua's, you know, last pass. Or certainly last scoring pass at Alabama. I think that's next to perfection in terms of the ball placement and the pass. I think that's just as pretty as it gets. And then one thing that was interesting to me, interested kind of your thought on it, Talia came into the game as, you know, the third quarterback, and it was really about a minute left in the game. And so at that point, and we've got sort of the 4-game rule on redshirting. You can play up to 4 games at any point in the season and still redshirt. At that point, Talia had played in 3 games. And so to bring him in with a minute left in you know, Mississippi State, with the score being what it was, to bring him in that position and that count as his 4th game, then at that point, the coaches had no reservation. There was no attempt to, let's do the math and figure out redshirting. I think they were all in getting Mack out and getting Talia at least some sort of rep in this game, because he likely is going to see a lot of action against Western Carolina.
I wasn't going to bring this up. I think that was dumb.
Do you?
Yeah, there was no reason for it. He came in and handed the ball off to Robinson 2 times and for 50 seconds. Big deal. You save that 4th game just in case.
Yeah.
I don't understand it unless they just – because Mack could use the reps in the entire Western Carolina game. It's not like Mack's played a lot of games. Like, I think you save the option of him redshirting unless – they know something we don't know, that Tua's gone for sure, and that now spring competition just started early. And so therefore he's not going to redshirt. He's going to play against Western Carolina. We're now going to have to pull out that wrinkle that we've been working on for him against Auburn to win a close game against Auburn. It almost tells you that they knew something else when they did that, because just football savvy, it was a dumb play. I think we're going to learn in the weeks ahead why they did that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and I hear what you're saying. I on the surface, I think it probably, and it does make you think it's either stupid or there's something else. And I guess
I'm guessing Auburn wrinkle. I'm guessing Auburn wrinkle.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking there had to have been some, and so let's get him, and by the time maybe they made the realization, let's get him into the game. The game was almost over, and it looks more clumsy than it was originally intended. I'll buy all of that. You know, my thought was, if you want to get Mac out, then, you know, for that last minute, run Slade. Just run the Wildcat. And because he's done that, that's nothing different. And so, you know, just go do that, and then you preserve the opportunity for Talia to play his fourth game in Western Carolina. And then if he doesn't play again, then you still have the opportunity to redshirt him. Whereas if he comes in and he plays half of Western Carolina, then you've burned his redshirt for that last minute. And so it does make me think, you think of all the analysts and you know, people joke about how many coaches Alabama has, but if you think of all the analysts and the GAs and the coaches and all that, you know, part of what they do is not just planning for an opponent, but planning for sort of what if circumstances. And so what's the, in case of emergency, break glass offense, and, you know, and now with Tua out, let's break the glass. What does that offense look like? Is there a folder somewhere that says, here's an offense that we can run with Talia that gives us a dynamic that's different than what we can run with Mac Jones? And to your point, the Auburn wrinkle is, are we going to see some of that? And so maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm,
you would hope yes,
thinking too much, but I think there's something there.
You hope yes, right?
Yeah.
We hope that there wasn't after the game, like, what? That was his fourth game? Really? I thought that was his third. Right? We hope that discussion did not happen.
Well, it reminds me of, and for the life of me, I'll forget the player, but it seemed like it was a game against Tennessee in Tuscaloosa. I want to say it was a defensive lineman.
Yes, a five-star, highly rated recruit. Yes. Yeah.
Was it D-liner? Yes, D-liner. And so he came in and played like two or three snaps in that Tennessee game, and we thought, oh, we've been waiting for him to have a chance, and he didn't play again the whole rest of the season and lost his entire red shirt over a couple of useless snaps in a Tennessee game.
Yes, that is correct. So
why do we remember this stuff, man?
I don't know, but I'm going to say that the wrinkle for Auburn sounds better. So
I mean, it sounds better. I hope it's got to be true, right?
All right, so give me your mini game ball.
All right, I'm going my mini game ball on offense. I'm going Jahleel Billingsley, freshman tight end. He had a play where we went in motion and ran into Najee, and I don't think that made a lot of people real happy. But he came back in. He played a lot against LSU and against Mississippi State. He got a chance to catch his first pass. It came off motion. It looked like he was going to come across, maybe block down. But he sort of spun out and ran a wheel route and 19-yard gain. I was glad to see that. Glad to see him involved. Hopefully see more of that. But going Jahleel Billingsley for my mini game ball.
All right. So this is probably not mini game ball worthy, but it might still somewhat count. I'm going to give Mac Jones mine. Obviously, he's had opportunities to play, but he's been sitting behind, you know, probably the greatest quarterback in college football this year. And he had to come in on a dime. And, you know, the first play from scrimmage, they call a pass play. And, you know, like you said, he finished 7 of 11. And, you know, he went through his progressions. He was quick with his decision-making. He didn't seem rattled. He didn't seem scared. He didn't seem timid. You know, this wasn't Auburn's front four, but it's still Mississippi State. It's still an SEC West opponent. And I think Bama fans have to look at how he responded when he came in and at least feel good about it. And so I'm giving it to him for those reasons.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a good one. Let's flip the field. What do you have on defense?
You know, defense, it was just unfortunate, the injuries. I'm going to let you kind of update the listeners from the get-go here with the different injuries that happened. You know, this is a kind of game when you were up 35-7 at the half and you've already lost Tua that you just want to get through the game. You know, obviously some of these injuries had come before Tua. But just talk to the listeners about, you know, the update for the guys that did come out of the game.
Yeah, this game, you know, this game started to look like a mash session. And not just for Alabama players. Mississippi State lost a couple of players to significant injuries. You know, two players definitely were carted off from the field of play. And I think Raekwon went to the sideline, and I think he was carted off from the sideline. And just horrific injuries. Obviously, there's Tua's injury. One of the Mississippi State players, when they came back from commercial, you know, they specifically said, almost awkwardly said, we are not going to run the replay of this. And so it just sort of sets your mind at, holy cow, what is going on in this game? And so, you know, we talked about Tua, you know, Henry Ruggs on offense also went down. But you know, across the defensive front, and especially the defensive front, Alabama really suffered some injury. Raekwon went down with what appeared to be an ankle. And in fact, they showed him later on crutches with a look like a walking boot. DJ Dale went down with a sprained knee, and then Fildarian Mathis. I didn't see him necessarily leave the game injured, but you know, reports are early part of the week that you know that he's iffy for Western Carolina, and so he went down with an injury. Top of my mind, I want to say it's a knee or a leg, but don't quote me on that. But that starts to and that starts to wear through some of the reserves on the defensive front. You add to that LeBrian Ray that's also injured, and that's your starting three plus one on the defensive front. So,
well, especially with the, you know, with the base nickel, right? Like you said, it's your first three guys, right?
Yeah.
And so to lose Dale and Davis and LeBrian already be out, is very tough. And so you got to see kids like Masika pretty early, right?
Yep.
I mean, I didn't count his snaps, but he logged a lot of snaps. And I'm going to tell you that the whole next man up, they had no choice. And they were sitting there at one point, and, you know, Fildarian Mathis and Masika was in there, and they were in there on, you know, first down, second down, third down. And, you know, a couple of those drives that lasted a few plays, you could see them, you could see them, you know, sitting here saying, okay, man, this is, you know, we're ready to tap our helmet on the top, but we can't tap our helmet because nobody's going to come in the game. And I guess I was specifically referring to right before the third quarter when Mississippi State had that 15 play drive is probably what I'm thinking of the most.
Yeah.
It was that drive that, if you're, you know, watching it at home and you don't track the depth of this team, you know, you're seeing numbers come out. And as you like to say, you're saying, well, who's this and who's this and who's this? And there was probably five or six guys on that 15 play drive that Bama fans probably, you know, if you blinked, you missed it, right? Earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think so. And you start looking at, and again, we're talking a little bit of Western Carolina, but you start looking at who's gonna man the defensive front, and you know, we've got about seven guys that are gonna play, but you know, it's a JUCO transfer in Tavita. And it's a lot of youngsters. In fact, there's a couple of guys, you know, I'm thinking of Shopshire and Ingram. They haven't played at all this season, and they're probably going to see reps. And so they'll still have the opportunity to redshirt, which I guess I'm thankful for that rule this year. But,
right.
But think about this, you know, state it this way, because you didn't know where this, you know, Christian Barrymore, that's who I'm thinking about. At the beginning of the season, we didn't know who, you know, say collectively, we didn't know who he was and when he was going to sort of rotate in. Now he's a fun guy to watch, but he's going to be air quotes, the vet on the defensive front this Saturday. That's a surprise.
No, absolutely. And unfortunately, on Raekwon's injury, you know, that was kind of freak too, right? Because Barmore is diving, you know, diving back at the quarterback and just landed right on his ankle, unfortunately. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, formation-wise. You know, I didn't get to join you on the LSU show, and in that game, I was very frustrated by the fact that, you know, Shane Lee and Christian Harris didn't play much in that game.
Yeah.
And we played a lot of dime, and instead of having Shane Lee and Harris in the game, we had Markel Benton and we had Jordan Battle, you know, for a lot of that game. And, you know, unfortunately, some of our backup players, you know, had some mental errors and key moments in that game. And I couldn't understand why Shane Lee and Christian Harris didn't play more in that LSU game. And so, you know, the opening series of this Mississippi State game, you see Shane Lee and Christian Harris back in there. Obviously, Mississippi State, you know, okay, how can I say this? Mississippi State opened the game in the same formation look that LSU was running predominantly in their game, but yet we started the game with Shane Lee and Christian Harris. And so they had one guy in the backfield next to the quarterback, and they had the three wides, and they had the tight end with the five offensive linemen. It was the same look. Mm-hmm. So why do you think in this game we saw more Shane Lee and Christian Harris and we didn't in the LSU game?
Yeah, so let me explain that. And if you're listening, you may want to pause and rewind this because this is a real complex answer. LSU was playing with LSU players and Mississippi State was playing with Mississippi State players. That is a talent gap, dude. That's my answer to that.
No. What I'm saying is why was Shane Lee and Christian Harris back in this game, but they were not predominantly utilized in the LSU game?
Because LSU is a more prolific passing game, and so we knew that we needed to play a dime to slow that down. We were not nearly as concerned with Mississippi State's passing game.
So we
could defend that with a nickel.
No, I'm with you, but here's my thing. Why wasn't Shane Lee or Christian Harris? We've talked about Christian Harris, right? Former safety in high school, right? We've talked about him, you know, getting better in the defense and sideline to sideline, his speed, etc., right? Christian Harris should have been in that game against LSU instead of Benton. And this is not the LSU show, but what I'm saying is like in this game, I get what you're saying about we ran more of our, you know, base nickel in this game because it was Mississippi State. I get you there. I just think that, okay, let me ask you this question then. Do you recall seeing Benton in this game at all? Because I don't.
No. It's harder to notice on TV, but I did not.
Okay. And so.
But let me throw this at you because this goes back a couple of weeks. And I want to say it was it the Arkansas game that we started to evolve what our dime package looked like. And our dime package specifically had Markel Benton at linebacker. Both of the other two guys were out.
Yes.
Markel Benton at linebacker, Barmore as more of a rabbit rusher up front, and then we brought Battle in.
Correct, so which is what we did against LSU. Right.
Yeah. And so against LSU, we mixed that up a little bit because we went with a bigger lineman than Barmore, but because we were playing more of a stuff to run up front and coverage in the back. But Benton stayed in. And so what that tells me, and we talked about it a little bit, is because we used to play dime and leave Shane Lee in early in the season. And we talked about, you know, Shane Lee of the two linebackers is not as mobile and versatile in coverage in the way that, you know, Christian Harris can be, but he might know the defense better. And so that's why he's in there. And what I think the coaching staff did and what we've, you know, just observing is that they spliced a piece of the role away from Shane and gave it to Markel because Christian wasn't ready for it. Markel could play that probably from a body type perspective better than Lee, and it lets Lee focus on the primary stuff. And so I think they just took the pie and and reallocated the slices to give Benton the dime package. And then some of that may have been foresight that, hey, when we play LSU, we're going to be in dime all day. So let's find somebody that we can drill the hell out of them in dime linebacker.
Okay, well, we'll just say there were some still missed assignments.
I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. But that's, look, you can have a great plan and it not execute
for
a
lot of different
reasons. And so I think that was the plan and probably the best available plan given, you know, given the linebacker core at that situation. 2 years from now, it's Christian Harris all day long. He was not there this year.
All right. So let me ask you this. Against LSU, remember how we talked about a few weeks ago, they started moving Anthony Jennings around and even lining him up off the line of scrimmage? Well, it seems like in this Mississippi State game, Terrell Lewis started doing some more of that like he did against LSU. I'm going to tell you, I just don't like that. Terrell Lewis is your get after the quarterback guy.
Yep.
I just don't like moving him off the line and sometimes dropping him off in coverage and stuff. That just sets him up for failure. That's not his skill set. Like, what is your thoughts on this? Like, I almost wish they'd go back to, you know, Jennings and Lewis, you know, on the line of scrimmage, you know, four guys going after the quarterback. I don't know where this experiment came from, but I think it needs to stop by the time the Auburn game gets here.
Well, I think, you know, I'm trying to remember the last time that we had a linebacker that I really liked in coverage. And it feels like,
Mosley maybe.
That's exactly right. That's the Abbott and Costello, like who's on first, right? You know, linebacker in coverage, CJ Mosley. And so it feels like, man, you know, every year that just seems like so much farther away. And so has it been, you know, 7 years or 6 years that since we've had a linebacker that was quality in coverage? I mean, maybe it.
Well, ironically, it would have been the same number this year if it would have been Dylan Moses. It would have been 32 again. But I just don't understand, like, in the, you know, I think that I just don't know what the thought process is in rushing three and dropping off Jennings or Lewis into covering a back out of the backfield or bouncing around where you go, you know, which lane you run in. Like, for example, in this game again, like LSU, once again, Terrell Lewis would sometimes be 6 yards off the line of scrimmage. Well, guess what? When the ball is snapped and the quarterback is trying to get the ball out quickly, you're 6 yards further away from getting to the quarterback. And you're like a great pass rusher. Like, you're giving the offensive lineman an advantage, in my opinion.
I think, probably an imperfect answer, but I think, you know, some of it has to do with mixing up the defense, giving them different looks. Are you running a zone, you know, versus man-to-man? And if you're man-to-man and your assignment's the linebacker and he flexes out, or your assignment, and, you know, that's how we see Anthony Jennings, you know, down the field and, you know, covering a back down the field, or Shane Lee covering the back down the field. It's not necessarily because that's what we would design them to want to do, but it's because the design of the play is we're running man-to-man, and you have to do what your man does.
I guess what I will tell you is that, I guess there's two things here. Number one, I would like them to stop doing that because they do not have Christian Harris's body type, right? They have the knowledge, but not Christian Harris's body type. And number two, you know, either have Xavier McKinney be that person or put Xavier McKinney back in the back in your base nickel and base dime. And bring Jared Maiden up and let Jared Maiden cover that running back out of the backfield, right? If Benton can't do it, because he didn't do it against LSU time after time after time and made the running back look like a star, if Shane Lee is not able to and Christian Harris is not ready, like, you know, what, as we get ready for Auburn, Auburn's going to give them a high dose of this, I guess, is why I'm bringing this up. And I hope they're thinking about, what are some other options here of next man up to try to defend it? That's all.
No, I agree. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like, but I agree. We absolutely need to have a better solution, you know, for that.
Teams are beating us up between the hashes, I guess is what I'm saying. When I saw LSU's quarterback do all his little stupid scrambles and dump off the little passes, you know, teams are kicking our ass between the hash marks.
Yes. Yeah.
What else do you have on defense that you want to bring up?
Well, you know, I'll just kind of I read, you know, one of the quotes from Saban after the game, and it made me think of the movie Dodgeball. And as much as we're talking about LSU and sort of the missed opportunities, I was iffy on using this, but I'm just going to use it. You know, Saban said, you know, something to the effect that, you know, we played well on defense. Everyone did what they were supposed to do. You know, they closed, they scraped, you know, whatever they were supposed to do, that's what they did. And so that made me think of the five D's of dodgeball, dodge, duck, dip, dive, dodge. And the whole idea that, and look, I'm going to apply this back to Mississippi State and LSU.
You are. Go ahead.
The idea is if you can master the concepts, if you can master the fundamentals, you can apply them, whoever your opponent is, or if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. And so what we didn't do against LSU, we did against Mississippi State. And if we did those exact same things against LSU, we would have won the game.
Man, that's some insightful stuff for you to bring up at 1 hour into this podcast, man. See, that's why listeners listen to the whole damn podcast. That's some good stuff right there.
Yeah, I made you work for that one.
That is so awesome. Okay, I'm ready for mini game ball, unless you have something else like that you want to pull out.
I don't think I can beat that, so we can go mini game ball.
All right, so I'm going to beat this with my mini game ball. You're going to love this, okay? My mini game ball is going to my boy.
Well, say who I think you're going to say.
You know what? I'll let you call it. I'll let you call who you think is going to be my mini game ball.
You're giving me a Gordo special.
Oh, man. Okay, so how were you able to go there with that? Why did you do that? Okay, so for his smart ass self, my mini game ball is going to Ben Davis, my boy Ben Davis. My boy Ben Davis made him a nice play and got him a sack on the stat sheet, and I hope that is more good things to come like that for my boy Ben Davis.
Fantastic. I don't know if you're in the room or you got a camera in here or something, but I have circled Ben Davis with a sack. He is my mini game ball as well. And I appreciate the fact that you got the Gordo reference. I was going to say something to the effect that, you know, playing at Mississippi State and getting the sack is almost like getting a play like that on his home field, because I think Gordo is a small town in Alabama. Very small town in Alabama that is probably almost halfway between Tuscaloosa and Mississippi State. And, yep, I called that one, and you got the Gordo. That was pretty perfect.
It was the only sack on the sheet, man. He got it, man. So I'm happy for the kid, man. That's awesome.
No, it is great.
It goes back to the whole specialization that we've talked about, though, right?
Yep.
Right? I mean, yep. He had one job there, and to his credit, you know, he did it kind of deal. All right. So talk about special teams here. What would we like to beat up on today?
There's probably one thing that I can kind of poke at. I don't think I beat up on anything. Yeah. Okay. Maybe one thing, Bolovis was 5 for 5, on his PATs, which was good. He had one.
So let me pause that, right? He didn't miss us. Is this the first week in 3 weeks?
It's been a minute.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
And then, you know, he had a field goal for 22 yards. And so if I'm gonna beat up on anyone, I am jokingly gonna beat up on Brian Greasy. There was a point in the game, and Alabama was going for 4th and 1, ball on the 26, and Brian Greasy says, "Don't you kick it here? Shouldn't you kick it here? Why is Alabama not kicking it here?" And I thought, because Alabama doesn't make 43-yard field goals. Have you not been paying attention?
Because you just got hired to do this show, and you have not done your research. You're thinking
he was like exasperated, and I was just laughing along with him.
I wish his colleague, right, could have said, "Dude, we talked about this on the prep show yesterday. They don't have a field goal kicker."
Right. And look, I think it's to look, I, you know, there's a serious side to it. You could reason, should we have let him kick it? You know, given an opportunity, in otherwise fail safe environment. And so I am torn between two explanations. One is we don't want to appear to be running up the score. 38 plus three gets us to 41. If we were at 36, maybe you kick it because you get to 39. And so going over, you know, sort of that next, that, you know, going into the 40s, do you want to do that? Does that look like running up the score? And then another point is, do you just have such low confidence that he's going to make it that you don't want to, that you don't want to put him in that situation? And I'm not sure which of those scare me more.
No, that's fair. Now, I have another little comment here. Do we see a transfer, since you did this to me, I'm going to do this to you. Do we see a pending transfer coming up under the new transfer rules from a kid out of Fort Mill, South Carolina?
Do we see a transfer into?
Out. Fort Mill, South Carolina. I know I'm going to stump you on this one. We're talking about special teams. I'll give you a hint.
Yeah, are you talking about Skyler?
Yep. Because then, all kidding aside, if you're a sophomore and your name is Skyler DeLong, and you are current and a walk-on is currently punting, and he had a miff against the number one team in the country, and he gets trotted out there again the next week, you have to be thinking you're done.
Well, yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think he's also on scholarship. And sometimes the way these things work, scholarships are annual.
I'm not mad at him. I'm just saying that I feel bad for the kid because, like, he had to be thinking on the sideline, I'm going to get a shot here against Mississippi State. And there was two punts made and he did not attempt one.
Right. No, I think that's fair. I think that's something to look for, right? That's the kind of thing that leads to, you know, potentially somebody leaving. I mean, hell, you know, Scooby Carter went into the transfer portal, you know, and we won't know the full story, but, you know, he was suspended for this game for missing class. And so is he that fragile of an individual that, you know, he can't handle following a rule, or is there a much sort of larger dynamic there? I probably think that there is, but it points to, you know, one public, you know, reprimand, and he transfers out. And like I said, there's potentially other things, but you start to look at what are factors that could contribute. And, you know, yeah, you're right. If you were, if you're a sophomore, with like the porn star name of punters, you figured I got to go somewhere to punt. If it's not going to be here, it's got to be somewhere else.
Well, it just makes you wonder, given the circumstances, you know, is he going to, we'll see. It'll definitely be something to look for. What else do you have on special teams before we look ahead at this next opponent?
I thought it was a little, you know, obviously they were kicking away, or they wanted to kick away from Jalen Waddle. I thought it was a little screwy and a little like awkward sideways the way that they were punting.
To start the game, right? I mean, they gave us the ball on like the 38-yard line to start the game.
Yeah, they did. They were sky kicking, and so that tells me they couldn't kick it out of the end zone, and so they were going to, you know, sky kick it. And then on the punts, it looked like they were intentionally sort of swiveling to the right, almost trying to overcompensate, you know, for a hook in his motion. And I just thought that was weird. But other than that, is, you know, I'm not a State fan, so I don't really know if that's sort of their standard deal. I don't know all the backstory of that. I just thought it was odd watching it. And that's probably all I'll ever know about it.
No, absolutely. Well, what do you think about the Catamounts coming into town? It's going to be the second, 11 o'clock kickoff. It's not going to be as hot as it was you know, when Southern Miss came to town back in September, what do you expect to see, you know, whenever they play this Western Carolina opponent?
Yeah, you know, I talked about a running clock earlier. I think this is definitely a game both teams should petition for a running clock. Obviously, it's a TV game, so that won't happen. You know, I think we're going to go out early and really sort of put on film a lot of different stuff that Mac Jones can execute, help build his confidence. So I think that's going to be, you know, very interesting to see. I think, you know, in doing that, we probably do build up a pretty nice early lead. And I might be surprised to see Talia play the whole second half, but I would really like to see him play most of the second half. And let's kind of see what we get there. I think, you know, being down so many defensive linemen, I'm a little bit nervous of that. You know, I want to say it's a 42-6 type game. I wouldn't be surprised if they're able to move the ball on the ground a little bit and maybe put up a few more points. And this might be the first game, we'll call this a prediction, this might be the first game of their relative careers in which Brian Robinson gets more touches than Najee Harris.
All right. Well, this is a team that lost to a 4-6 North Carolina State team, 41-0. And, you know, I think this is going to be a game that's going to be hard for. Okay. It's going to be a good confidence builder for Mac, because I think they're going to break 50, you know, even without, you know, Tua.
We do that? Are we allowed to do that?
We're not allowed to do that, but I don't think they can help it in this game. Okay. I just really don't. I mean, VMI put up 43 points on them. I mean, heck, Warford put up 59 points on them. So
what's a Warford?
They're a terrier. Warford Terriers. That's all I got for you, man. Heck, man, the Chattanooga.
Those are those little lap dogs, right?
Yeah, something like that, man. Chattanooga Mox put up 60 on them. So, I mean,
come on. A pair of shoes did that, huh?
Yeah. So, you are definitely in rare form today. So, I'm going to say that Saban's going to be pretty pissed, but I'm going to say this is going to be like a 60-3 outcome.
Oh, he is going to be, that's going to be fun watching them get mad if we do that.
Yeah. And I think we have two running backs break 100 yards.
Really?
Yeah, and I think Mac Jones throws for over 300.
Oh, heavens.
Yep.
Okay.
They're going to put some stuff on film.
That would be a lot of stuff. I'm like, when we do this, I typically say, I hope that you're right. That would be a lot more points than I mean, hell, that's 20 more points, and I think that's 21 more points than I think we'll score. So,
let me also put out there, though, man. You know, the eye test is out there, and you know, there's still a roster full of players that had visions of what this season was going to look like, and so, you know, I think there's a little part of them that they got to go hanging on them here. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they have to put on a little bit of a show here a little bit.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think there's probably something to that. If we're going to, and again, you know, Tua was the X factor. If you're sitting at, you know, Oklahoma, you know, a big, whatever conference they're in, Big 12 conference, they're 11-1. You've got the winner, you know, potentially of the Pac-12, and they're sitting at 11-1, and then Alabama sitting there is 11-1 and not a conference champion. In years past, they've selected Alabama in that exact circumstance. This year, I don't know if they would. Tua was an X factor that would help us. And so Mac is not that same X factor, but if we can create a little bit of that, or at least remove some of the doubt that this Alabama offense is still as explosive, then it's probably something that would behoove the team and the staff, given the goal of winning a title,
we've got to do something to get into the four. And a big, gaudy number against Western Carolina could help us do that.
Especially, you know, with the backdrop of the next man up. I mean, I do think it will turn a few heads.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Well, I'll root for that.
All right. Anything else you got?
I don't think so.
All right, man. Well, take us out.
Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.